does have a new process model. At least the HTTP listener is not going to be running as a highly privileged user. It's actually going to be a device driver that sits in the kernel. Hopefully, it will be very, very thin and hand things off very quickly into user mode. But I think in the long term, that will be a smarter design than what they have currently, with a monolithic process running as the system account handling all these requests. The buffer overflow that I showed you, the dot printer, really works because the IIS process runs as system. When you buffer overflow that process, you get to execute commands as the system user. Microsoft has needed to change that for some time now, and they're finally taking steps to do that. They've been running their web server as root, essentially. And then, of course, the new version of all Microsoft technologies is going to have built-in fixes. So many of the things that I've showed you here today are going to be fixed in the new version. So, you know, as much as being on the bleeding edge can be painful, with Microsoft, you want to try mightily to be there, especially with something exposed to the internet like IIS. And then last but not least, don't forget application security. If you're running a web server, you can have the best patched Microsoft web server in the universe. But if you have a directory traversal flaw built into your custom application, you're just as vulnerable. So be aware that web server security is not just about vendor code, it's about your own code. Some tactical countermeasures for LSA, and these are just a series of bullets here that I'll go through quickly. Be very careful with trust relationships between Windows domains. If you extend them across security boundaries like firewalls, you're taking a potential risk that one of these accounts can be authenticated in a domain where you're not expecting it to be. Probably the most important bullet point is the second one, which is don't use highly privileged domain accounts as service accounts. That's really the issue that we find with LSA secrets. The fact that we find the password is not necessarily the biggest area of damage that we do. The problem is that a password is for an account that's very highly privileged on another domain or in the current domain. So once we have those credentials, we're God. There's a setting in the Windows security policy, Windows 2000, where you can set the number of previous logons to cache to zero. It's a related problem. Microsoft, the Windows actually caches domain logons in the LSA secret store as well. So for those of you that have used Windows 2000, you may have been curious at the fact that you can actually log on to your domain when you're not plugged into the network. So how does that happen? Well, your password is cached locally, and it's checked against the local store, and that's stored in the LSA secrets. So for those of you that are worried about having your domain logon credentials floating around various machines, you may want to set this setting to zero to prevent that. There is a privilege for Windows accounts called SEDebug, and that is what allows you to implement the LSA secrets attack that I described. You can remove that privilege from the local administrator's accounts. Of course, once you attain administrator level privilege, you can add that back, so it's not really a countermeasure, but it can slow people down. And I think the penultimate bullet there is be very, very protective of the local administrator account. There's some best practices that I've talked about in some of my books that many of you are probably familiar with. Obviously, set complex passwords, set a lockout threshold. The Microsoft local administrator account is not locked out by default over the network. You can set that though, however. There are a series of things you need to be very careful about the local admin account. And then, of course, pray that you don't get compromised at the administrative level in the first place, because if somebody does that, they're probably going to run an LSA secrets attack against you. So let's talk briefly about strategic countermeasures. Applying all these point fixes can make you feel an awful lot like you're sort of running in circles. How do you avoid trouble in the first place? And I sort of throw this in as an amalgamation of some of the processes and issues that I've seen in Microsoft environments over the years. Some of it's security 101, so I'll go through it very quickly. Many of you have seen this or versions of this security life cycle at one time or another. Detect, respond, plan, prevent. And it is a circle. It is something that you will continuously be doing as a security practitioner, professionally or as a system administrator. And I think that that's something you have to resign yourself to early on, is that your work is never done. So detection, logging and monitoring is clearly important. Some of these attacks that I've talked about, like .printer, will not show up in the IIS logs, but they will show up in the event logs as applications shutting down abnormally. You need to know what to look for. And clearly, I recommend doing that as well as you can. Security assessments are very important. Continuous security assessments. Have an in-house red team that does this on a regular basis. Often I find, and was discussing it last night, the internal folks know your systems best of anybody. You can hire consultants, and they're probably not going to find some of the things that your internal people already know about. So definitely have an internal team. But don't forget the value of an unbiased third-party opinion. Occasionally throughout the year, have consultants come in, have somebody that you trust come in and do a network and system penetration review. Do a web application review. We've been doing a lot of those recently and have found that it's something that's been neglected for a long time. People just sort of figured, yeah, we've got port 80 open and we patched our web server, so we're all right. Well, there's a whole layer of logic there that you need to take a look at. And the last bullet point there, having to do with assessment, is remember the importance of continuous assessment. Networks are dynamic environments. They change all the time. You know, you may want to consider a managed vulnerability assessment service that's either run internally or run by a vendor that's looking at your network on a long-term and continuous basis. And again, I'll highlight the point of independent review. Often, of course, the common knock to internal review is that politics gets involved, and I've seen that in my career. I think it's important at junctures to have third parties come in and take a look at the network. I think if you're auditing your own work all the time, it ultimately leads to problems or missed issues. Response is obviously a critical component of any security effort, and I've highlighted one particular bullet point there, which is vulnerability remediation. With Windows technologies, as I mentioned, patch management is critical. I've known large organizations that have dozens of full-time people devoted solely to Windows patch management. It's a real difficult from a resource standpoint to do, but you have to do it and make sure that you're really paying attention to that. And then, of course, obviously, you know, have an incident response policy. An incident response capability, if you have the budget and the resources to do that, you know, be aware of the tenets of forensic analysis, either through a consultant or your own internal efforts, and be aware of the ultimate destination of responding to a security incident, which is potentially litigation. Make sure your legal departments are aware of what you can do and what you can't do. Planning, of course, is being proactive. And I think that, you know, you have to do this clearly to make sure that the point issues that I've shown you earlier today are taken care of to begin with. Hopefully they're not there in the first place. And that's done through designing secure systems, having a baseline Windows deployment platform and image that you make sure is enforced by policy throughout an organization so that these sorts of vulnerabilities don't get deployed time and again, over and over again. Ongoing operational maintenance of processes to make sure that the image that you have is updated with the most recent patches, that people are getting the support that they need from the security program at your organization. And then, of course, policy development is critical. A lot of what I've discussed here today is really sort of an abstract discussion in a vacuum without having a policy behind it. You know, organizations you can't have security without a policy. There's no way to define whether something is wrong unless you've sat down and said this is wrong. So make sure that policy development is central to your efforts. The Carnegie Mellon people, I believe, have a mnemonic, I guess, they call CIA, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And that's something that you could sort of use as something to base a policy on. There is a developing international standard called ISO 17799 that is a sort of a building block for what a sample security policy basically is what it is today. I've done a lot of audits against the ISO standard. It's a good starting point for building a security policy. And for those of you that are interested in sort of getting started, the Site Security Handbook, which is an RFC, has been around for years. It's kind of an amusing read and has a lot of sort of the basic security 101 policy stuff. Last, I guess, but not least in the security lifecycle that I've displayed here is prevention. Secure product design is critical, and implementation as well. This is probably more centric for vendors, but certainly, as I mentioned, many of you probably have applications that are built by business units in your environments, and you need to get in the design phase, get in as early as you possibly can, and make sure that things are designed and implemented appropriately, basically writing secure code. Subject your applications and your products, if you are a vendor, to independent third-party review. I mentioned I've done a lot of security product review for Microsoft and other companies, and I can't stress enough the value of that, even as an unbiased person that gets paid for doing it. The stuff that we find in products before they get to market just saves companies worlds of hurt. It's something that's definitely invaluable. And then education, of course, is critical. Many of you are here today because you know that. Seek out training. Keep up to date as much as you can with the latest vulnerabilities, the latest attack paradigms. Staying informed is a critical component of that. I've mentioned securityfocus.com there on the bug track mailing list. There are many other lists that people can subscribe to keep up with what's going on in the community. I'm sure that's not a secret lost on this group. I mentioned writing secure code, and it turns out there's a book by that name, and I recommend this heartily. This is written by a couple people from Microsoft that I've worked with over the years and respect very much. And it is kind of a soup to nuts description of their efforts in doing Microsoft product security reviews over the years. And there's some really real gems of wisdom in there for anybody that's developing web applications or software that runs on Microsoft platforms. You should really check that out. Get your development groups tuned into that. Another bullet point about writing secure code is that Microsoft is implementing a new development paradigm called a .NET framework. And it's part of their larger .NET initiative. It's often confused sometimes with the larger initiative, but it's just a component of that. And basically what it is a development environment that offers a compelling security model similar to Java 2. You have sort of this transparent baked-in security that's basically baked into the interpreter. You have these things called assemblies that developers can write that are sort of like Java applets, and they are just-in-time compiled in the interpreter, which is called the common language runtime. And there's a whole slew of security checks that are done on the code as it executes. For all practical purposes, a buffer overflow does not exist within the common language runtime. It's a pretty interesting approach. Its roots are before Microsoft, certainly, but it looks to be a very robust alternative to our current runtime engines and environments like the C runtime that are subject to these things like buffer overflows. I participated in the writing of a white paper that discussed some of my work at a previous company analyzing the security of the common language runtime and the .NET framework, and you can get that at that URL there. Anybody wants to get the full URL, send me an email if you can't copy it down here. So that was my presentation. I have some parting shots, and I think, the tough thing about security is, as many people have said, the defenders have to defend against all the potential possibilities, all the potential attack avenues. The hackers and the attackers, intruders, whatever you want to call them, only have to find one. Makes the job very difficult. Remember that newer attacks are bypassing firewall security, so the old bricks and mortar and moats approach doesn't necessarily work anymore. Compartmentalization is still very important, but it's not foolproof. And I think, last but not least, I think that Microsoft is serious about security. I think the recent memo from Bill Gates indicates that. Anybody with that type of resources writing a memo like that, certainly not doing it for mental exercise. And the guy could be doing anything he wants. So certainly Bill Gates is very serious, and I believe that. The real question with Microsoft will be, is his vision going to translate into the line management? Are they going to execute on this? And I think we've seen some encouraging signs recently, and I think that there is a good future in security for Microsoft. So keep the faith if you can. And remember that security is a journey, not a destination. And there's my contact information for anybody that wants to email me following this presentation. Feel free. I mentioned I would talk a little bit about myself. Again, I'm a co-author of Hacking Exposed, the original, up through the third edition where it's at now. It's been a while. Actually, almost it was September that I published the Hacking Exposed Windows 2000 edition. So that's a 400 pages on just Windows 2000 security. Covers a lot of the stuff here, plus a whole bunch more. And just recently in June, I published a Hacking Exposed Web Applications edition. So as I highlighted in the discussion today, an increasingly important attack paradigm is through port 80 or SSL, through the firewall. How do you defend your web applications against attacks? Because you can't just turn them off, certainly. So I thank you for your time. If anybody has questions.
We got some time for questions.
Sure. Happy to answer. So how many people are Microsoft centric, would you say? About half. What's your biggest problem?
I have a question for you. If you can provide a fix and a patch, why can't you provide a product that doesn't have a hole to begin with?
So that's like making the car without the seatbelts, right? I think there are two sides to that coin. I would say that, you know, you can't chastise vendors for writing bugs. I mean, people make mistakes. Software is riddled with holes. And some of the stuff is hard to see beforehand. And I think that ultimately people are going to have to deal with patching those problems. I do agree with your point, however, when Microsoft publishes an IS5 security checklist 2 years after releasing the product, it begs the question of why they didn't configure the thing out of the box and do it to be that way. And I certainly agree with the default insecure configuration problem that they've had. It has really cost them a lot of customer loyalty. Bad PR, right? So, I don't know, that was kind of an answer, but I guess I agree with you 50%.
You would buy a car that had a bunch of bugs in it, and expect to pay full price, and Microsoft, just later on the licensing, is really holding everybody's feet to the fire, saying, we want full price for everything, because we got the same product, yet you're not willing to stand up and allow people to you.
Well, I think pricing is always negotiable, right? I think I would encourage the user community to be very vocal about that. And I think, you know, at some point, you've got to force Microsoft to deliver the quality, the patch management solutions, whatever it is that you need before you're willing to lay out for that. I think that that's certainly, it's easy for me to say, certainly, but you know, as they say sometimes, write your congressman, send a letter to Bill G. Another question?
I'd like to encourage who has an OS that you can load out of box.
Sony PlayStation.
OpenBSD has their SSH.
Yeah, they got a
whole new one. One wireless computer versus how many in 6 months?
Yeah, that gets to be a philosophical discussion very quickly. But I think that, you know, You look at a vendor that's beaten on like Microsoft, and you know they're still here, and it, sometimes it you know it you can think of it as a positive thing. You know, I mean, they have suffered the slings and arrows, certainly, and hopefully, again, you know, we can take Bill Gates at his word. You know, they're going to make efforts to take care of the problem. Certainly, again, software is tricky. Anybody that's done it will tell you that. You know, writing business logic, especially the complexity of an operating system, is tough, which is not to excuse things like buffer overflows and web servers. And certainly, you know, Microsoft should be punished where they deserve it. And I think I agree with you, you know, admired for what they have accomplished. I mean, the majority market share of a commercial operating system. It's not trivial.
You mentioned Windows 2000, and you talked really lightly about patches. Certainly Windows 2000 has now got an add-on that goes out there and patches on. Is that the way we're going?
I think the question was, you know, is automated internet-based patch management the way we're going? Clearly, I think it is. That's where Microsoft would like to be because it saves them money of having to answer the phone. They have a lousy story and were chastised very recently on the NT BugTrack mailing list for not getting their act together over many years and having many different separate repositories for patches for different products. You know, they have a security website. They have a little patch IIS and the operating system and SQL. You have to go to another place to get patches for the browser. You know, the federated Microsoft patch repository has not been done right yet. And that's another area where you can beat them up, certainly, and put their feet to the fire and get them to get a database of the most recent versions of the files that you should be running that you can at least go check, even if you're not going to deploy them right away. You should at least be able to go and check that.
But I found that the BSA, the security analyzer, doesn't even work with the Microsoft products that it does work with. So you're providing a tool that you give to users with no notification, taking away other opportunities, and then provide a tool that still doesn't go check the right patches. Or when you apply those patches, say you didn't apply the patches because you did them in a different order versus all that. So not to bash that, I just think that Microsoft sometimes makes changes to the user community without telling the user community, and then provides a tool that doesn't fix the problem.
Yeah, I think you should bash them for it. I mean, they had the HF NetCheck tool that was a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
But then the MBSA now is going to take over that role and had some initial false steps.
My concern is with this automated process, what are you using for certification and authentication? Certificates, I believe, is going to be the basis of how you're providing those automated things. Now you have to get into certificate security, and who owns that? You know, where does that get?
Yeah, I mean, I think authentication will always be an issue. I think that ultimately, you know, I think that'll be logistically handled. Somebody will work that out. I think that Microsoft, in the first place, needs to provide a trusted repository of where people can at least go and say, all right, I know that I need to be running this. I don't need to ask any more questions about revisions or you know, other updates or you know, backwards compatibility. It's just, you know, I don't want to have to think about it. And they haven't done that very well, certainly. We had another question in the middle here, yes.
My question is more off on point, and that is, somebody brought up the fact that why can't Microsoft release an OS without bugs? Well, tell you where I'm coming from the Sun perspective. I'm a Sun instructor, and a lot of times when we see new releases of the Sun 5, you'll see things that were bugs and that they got out of, a new OS comes out and they're back again. Just because there's millions of lines of code that it's almost impossible to really get a new OS released without some bugs. So there's always going to be problems. But my other point is the fact that I've always felt that Microsoft has been more interested in market share than releasing a really good quality operating system. And now that security has in effect affecting their market share, now let's focus on security. Before it was, let's just get the product out the door, make it as easy for people to use as possible, and then we'll fix the problems later. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think that's been true of software vendors all over the world. I don't think security has been a real major concern except in the last 3 to 5 years. And it's been a slow build over that time period. And I mean, I think Windows 95 is a good example. Ease of use was the paradigm there, which is the opposite of security in a lot of ways. So, you know, in a way, yes, the design goal was to exclude security. Windows 95 is different than NT 2000 XP, so it's kind of a different conversation, but I think it's illustrative of the same problem. And I guess that's why I do take Bill Gates at his word. When he says security before new features, that's a paradigm shift.
Well, it's not just Microsoft either.
It's
all the companies are going to market share. And now they realize that, well, if we don't address security, we're going to lose market share because companies are going to go towards whoever has the most security.
Right.
Whoever's making the best OS.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent, too, the market is waking up to that as well. I mean, people haven't moved because of security. Maybe that's lack of alternatives, maybe some other reason, I don't know. But, you know, I think now, though, people are starting to make economic decisions based on security, let's hope. I mean, it would hopefully make some of our jobs easier, I think. You know, where you could actually go to your management and say, sure, don't put in security, people aren't going to buy it. That gets people's attention. So, yeah, I think those are good points. And you know, markets are funny things and hard to pin down. And you know, hopefully it's working the way it should, and people are buying things that are better and more secure, not just easier to use. But I think that remains to be seen.
Actually, one quick question, and then we'll move along. Have you installed any of these in the factory?
No, I saw a beta of that.
What was the question?
Have you installed Windows 8 Service Pack 3?
Yeah, and, no, I
wait.
Can
you res a license?
I wait. No, once the license
you hand over your keys to the kingdom to Microsoft because they need to be able to install digital rights management updates on your system at will.
That's interesting.
It's written right into the U letter, so more of a philosophical maybe question or point. You're talking about the .NET security framework.
Right.
And maybe I looked at the paper a little bit. You know, there's a lot of features in there that they talk about for security. But I kind of go back to the old DoD days, my background, and the concept of trustworthy systems. And one of the points is assurance. Assurance that the security mechanisms will do what we expect them to, that they can't be bypassed, that they will actually perform the job that they're supposed to perform. Do you really think that Microsoft can pull off something that would be worthy of being trusted in a security framework?
It's questionable whether software could do that at all, period. You know, now you get into this, you mentioned digital rights management, which brings up the topic of this thing they call Palladium now, which is, they're taking great pains not to call it a trusted OS, and it's going to have something to do with the trusted driver that probably hooks into the hardware at some point, so that somebody can make sure you're not, you know, playing pirate in MP3s, right? So, you know, it's one step on the slippery slope, or maybe it's just the record companies trying to get some of their revenue stream back. Who knows? But, yeah, I think I agree with you that, you know, a lot of these, you know, points about Microsoft tie together. I mean, they're a software vendor. Ultimately, if you control the machine, the hardware, I don't care what software you're running on. I can Trojan it, backdoor it, patch it, whatever you want to call it. You can even have an external smart card reader. I can shim the driver. I mean, it's real tough to do software security. You know, some people call it programming Satan's computer. If I own the hardware, I mean, it's almost anybody's game. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see whether a company with the resources of Microsoft can change that fundamental preset with their you know, links to Intel and the chip makers. You know, whether they can pull that off and build a trusted platform, to call it an OS. Because again, I would think it has to be based on hardware at some point. Digital certificates is going to have to link online at some point. You know, a standalone machine, forget it, use your own system. You can't do it. At least today, I would say that. Until somebody really fundamentally changed the landscape, yeah, I would agree with you. You know, forget trusted computing basis. You know, given the assumptions of a commercial, consumer-oriented operating system, I don't think we can do it. I don't know. You know, $38 billion in liquid assets, though, can change people's minds and do some funny stuff. Got another question in the back?
Yeah, you mentioned the recommended egress over the net, so I wanted to hear that. Is it in the same, Microsoft has also got ways where they can automate their patent process by going out to their site and getting patent. I haven't found, if you know of any documentation where you can tie down the egress filter and only get to their patenting system for whatever and still not allow the other full.
Right, so egress filtering to make sure that your patch management is going to the right place. And I think that...
Well, make patch management work.
Right.
But nothing else does.
Right. You know, I think that will become a logistical issue. I don't think they're using DCOM to do that, where you've got to open a whole slew of ports. You know, a lot of it's web-based HTTP downloads, so you can lock that down with a simple router ACL, run it through a proxy, even better, outbound proxy. So I think certainly there are mechanisms that exist today that will allow you to do that. And I think it's a good opportunity to highlight the importance of understanding what's authorized to go out of your network as much as you want to block what's not authorized coming in. I think there's so much of the firewall, you know, defend from the outside mentality today that people really are forgetting that it takes much more mental effort to define your outbound controls, and they're just as important in a lot of instances. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah.